We switch gears now to talk about, well, about us, I guess. Article in Newsweek, of all places, a couple of days ago caught my attention. It's titled UFOs and Ghosts, How Mainstream Culture Has Turned Us into Believers. And from that title, you might think it's a little judgmental about folks like us who discuss these topics. It isn't. It's about the work of my next guest, Dr. Paul Kingsbury, who has been digging into what sort of makes people like us tick, why we're interested in UFOs and ghosts and Sasquatch and crop circles. And he's come up with some interesting findings. We're going to ask him about it right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. My next guest is halfway through a four-year research project looking at the activities and interests of folks like us. He has attended UFO, Bigfoot, and crop circle conferences in the U.S. and the U.K., engaged in field work with ghost investigators, Sea SETI, and Sky Watchers. His future plans include participating in Bigfoot expeditions in the Pacific Northwest, and he's back to tell us what makes us tick. Dr. Paul Kingsbury, welcome.
Hi, George. Thanks for having me on the show.
Can you share with us, as for those who haven't heard you before, sort of how you got started on this?
Yeah, so you mentioned that Coast to Coast AM could be part of these cultural forces that are mainstreaming the paranormal. And indeed, that was one of the factors for how I got interested in a research project on the paranormal. But what I noticed amongst my academic colleagues was, okay, we were researching the social sciences issues related to ghost hunting reality TV shows, the overlaps between the extraordinary folklore, movies on zombies and so on. But no one in academia was determined or focusing on people in the real world on the ground investigating paranormal topics. So I decided, as a geographer, someone who's very interested in how places work, people's relationships to places, to actually speak to and study people themselves. And I spent a summer crafting a grant proposal for a Canadian federal institution and was granted the money. And like you say, George, I'm now halfway through the project.
You know, what I really liked about your approach is that it's not as judgmental as one might expect. I would imagine when you share the idea with your colleagues in academia, academic circles, that they look at you crazy. They assume that you think that people like us are crazy. There was a piece in Time magazine sort of on the same topic earlier this month, a couple of days ago, why smart people still believe conspiracy theories. And their premise is there are plenty of smart people who should be smart enough to know better than to take this seriously. And you don't go that route.
No, I think you're right, George. I try and, you know, I'm not looking to prove or disprove these paranormal phenomena. I'm seeking to take seriously people's narratives, their experiences in these disparate objects. I would say that in the past decade, academia has, you know, taken seriously the rise of alternative spiritualities, New Age beliefs, and so on. And so there are a number of books, articles that are on paranormal cultures. So I think the culture of academia has shifted quite a lot in the last decade. And so people, my colleagues at Simon Fraser University have been very supportive of the project. There's a kind of, you know, surprise in a way that what I'm doing, but I think there's a great deal of respect. And I think academics like myself are very serious about trying to understand how society works, the shifts in people's beliefs.
Let's start with crop circles, because that's what the new recent Newsweek article sort of started. Did you go over this season?
Yeah.
Or was that last season?
Yeah, I was this year. I was in England in August, and I attended the summer lectures conference in Devizes. This is one of the world's most renowned crop circle conference, organized by Karen and Steve Alexander. And I was there for 3 days, and it was in the county of Wiltshire, which is, you know, a hotspot for crop circles. There's approximately up to 80% of all crop circles have been located in this county in southwest England. And it was a fantastic event. It involved a sacred geometry workshop whereby participants would be drawing with protractors and compasses the crop circles so that they could become more intimate and more aware of their sacred and logical designs. There's also a sacred, there was a consciousness workshop where the participants were recording their dreams because many researchers believe there's a link between consciousness and the crop circles. And the conference in many ways was similar to some of the UFO conferences I attended because they are primarily centers for learning and teaching. They involve presentations, award ceremonies, banquets, and they mimic in many ways the world of academia in terms of our conferences. In terms of the structure, the content is somewhat different, but it operates this culture through the desire to learn and share experiences with the paranormal.
Well, it's like a mirror in a sense that you know, ufology, crop circle studies, they want to mirror scientific protocols because they, I think a lot of the investigators figure that that adds credibility to what they're doing.
Yeah, there's a definite parallel in terms of this desire to find out what is behind the crop circles, for example. What struck me at the conference, George, was there was less focus on what was causing the crop circles as opposed to an appreciation of the beauty of the aesthetics of the crop circles. So unlike ghosts, Sasquatch, UFOs, these are primarily sort of spectral objects. There's video captures of these objects, but crop circles on the other hand are tangible. You can visit the crop circles, you can go inside them, and indeed I managed to get inside one crop circle with some of the research is there. So in my project, I'm looking at the geographies of the field sites and the conferences as crucial geographies that bring people together to create these paranormal cultures.
I got to go over to that area, Salisbury, and into crop circle season some years ago. One part that I think some academics who are studying this field is sort of a subculture don't realize is that it's a lot of fun. It's
yeah.
Fun.
Yeah, I've had a blast doing this research, I've got to say. I've made very good friends and colleagues, people at the MUFON conference, my first UFO conference I went to, Know How to Party. Like academics, they populate the hotel lobby bars till the early morning hours, discussing very passionately their various theories, sharing pictures of UFOs, UAPs at the in the bar restaurant areas, and I think this is part of my argument when I write up my my articles and book will be that people go to these conferences for the fellowship, for like-mindedness. They won't be ridiculed by colleagues or family members, and they are a lot of fun, these conferences. And one of the ideas I'm toying with is that these conferences are hard work in terms of the amount of talking that goes on, the amount of time listening to the presentations. And it's almost as though the participants get abducted by the conferences because we leave our families, we travel long distances, we go to an entirely different space in the world, and we kind of lose ourselves in the conference space, and then afterwards we have to readjust to going back to normal life, back to our routines, back to our families. So they really fascinate me, these conference spaces.
Well, I it's fascinated me for 30 years or so, and in part for the same reason it does you, because of the interaction between the people, the turf wars in each of these subcategories. Crop circle people who argue with each other and have turf wars, the UFO people certainly do in multiple subcategories. They'll argue for days about the Roswell crash, what the date was, how many crashes, how many bodies, what the writing on the crash debris stuff said, and where it went. And then you have the ghost people and the Bigfoot people, and there are wards between the various subcategories.
Yeah, these are very diverse groups. At times, I think there is a tolerance level between the different opinions. I'm coming in. I began several years ago, and there's been decades of paranormal research cultures, and I know there's been quite heated debates, schisms between various groups. But I think I'm impressed by the collaborative responses between people. At the Crop Circle conference, it was on Sunday morning during one of the consciousness workshops, which was being led by Dr. Jonathan Paul de Vierville. And we were reflecting on our frustrated attempts for some of us to get into a crop circle at Hackpen Hill in Wiltshire. There was a fence by the field, and a sign said, "Crop Circle Closed." And it was very unusual for me. I didn't imagine that there'd be signage alerting us about a crop circle being closed. Some members of the party decided, well, we should respect the sign. There's an initiative, crop circle initiative, between people who liaise with farmers and the enthusiasts as a way to avoid damage to fields, to enable farmers to manage the traffic to these crop circles. So some people respected the sign. We went back into the car. But others ignored the sign and went into the crop circle, which we saw them go into it from the vantage point of Hackpen Hill. And in this consciousness workshop, there was a really fascinating discussion between, on the one hand, Jonathan, who was suggesting that, you know, the crop circles have been somewhat commodified. We are kind of consuming these sacred sites, these objects, with a lack of respect. But then another researcher, he was from Dublin, Jeff, was saying that, well, the crop circle was calling me. It would have been more inappropriate if I ignored the call of the crop circle. And as a geographer, I was just really thrilled to hear these ways in which space and our relationship to boundaries and insides and outsides of the fields brought to the fore a kind of political discussion, or a discussion that was revolving around the status of the crop circle as something sacred. But it was a very respectful discussion, and but it exemplified, like you say, there's a number of different groups that comprise these various research domains.
Were there any circle makers at this conference? Figure that a lot of these circles are clearly made by humans, flattening grain with boards, but some of them are sort of more mysterious than that. It's interesting to know what drives those guys to make them.
Yeah, so the circle makers was the phrase they used, and there's the famous case in the early 90s of Doug and Dave, who were who revealed that they conned the world in the Today newspaper in the UK since 1978 with their string and board crop circles. So there was somewhat there's discussion of human-made crop circles, but a significant number of the researchers argued that when it comes to the authentic crop circles, the stalks of the crops have a kind of brushed appearance. The stems are not broken or damaged in a kind of more mechanical way that would be done with the crushing with boards. There was one idea from Karen Alexander that we are ourselves the circle makers, insofar as our consciousness is interacting with the landscape, our unconscious desires and so on. There's a synchronicity between consciousness and the crops. There was another presentation. She was arguing that these crop circles are divine feminine energy. Then there's this focus on the aquifers, the energy ley lines from the chalk, rock stone in the Wiltshire area. So there was numerous theories, and it was very diverse. But a great deal of emphasis on the sheer beauty and the visual power of these crop circles.
The proximity to ancient sites there in the Wiltshire area is intriguing.
Yes, the one idea is that the Stonehenge and Avebury was the kind of capital of Neolithic Britain that these crop circles are imprint signatures of perhaps magnetic energy fields or energy that is able to increase the yield sizes for these crops. Tests have been done finding if there is mature crops that have been implicated in a crop circle formation, then they will create much higher yields, and then these ancient Neolithic sacred sites then could have been kind of fertility sites for various crops. So it is very much hard to believe that there is, it's just random that 80% of the crop circles appear in this this sacred landscape.
The Bigfoot Sasquatch field. So I what I read was that you were going to go on an expedition at some point. I don't know if you've done that yet or not, but I let's talk about that field a little bit. You've been to at least one of the conferences. There are some pretty deep divisions there. I mean, you've got the folks who are believe in flesh and bone undiscovered primate species, and then folks who have much more expansive views of what this creature is.
Yeah, so I was with my PhD student, Oliver Keene, and we attended the Sasquatch Summit in Ocean Shores in Washington last November. And again, it's a conference space with diverse opinions, diverse theories. Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum was there, who is a big proponent of the idea of a physical hominid. The conference was opened up by a Native American elder who suggested that these are people. These beings have a kind of human quality that we must respect. They're different, but they should be respected. Then there were a presentation involving, you know, plaster casts to and bone evidence to suggest with teeth from supposed Sasquatch that, again, they are skin and bone hominids. We interviewed not so long ago, George, the British Columbia Cryptozoological Scientific Club. It's led by John Kirk, and they're absolutely convinced that these are creatures that, as yet, have not been codified by science. That it is only a matter of time before we can formalize them. And then there are some people suggest they could be interdimensional beings. I had a conversation with Sandra Marsh at the Open Minds Symposium in Scottsdale, Arizona. So again, with these paranormal objects, what defines them is that they're always just out of reach in terms of making them empirical objects, that is to say, putting them into a laboratory or a box or a crate. And this is part of the culture, is that they are inciting people's desire to come together, to spend lots of time, energy, and sometimes money in considering them.
So you can consider multiple motives for something like that, why people would go to those lengths. Obviously, different motivations for different people. But it's been suggested that it's sort of a religious, drawn by the same reasons people are drawn to be devoutly religious.
Yeah, and I found that one of the main reasons people get involved in paranormal investigation research is that they have had profound paranormal experiences themselves. So
right.
I've been working with Charles Lamoureux in Vancouver. Charles is based downtown Vancouver, and he's captured some extraordinary urban sightings of UAP orb footage in the sky, and he is absolutely convinced that these are not satellites, or they are not trash in the sky. And I've been on two fieldwork projects with him, and the footage is there on YouTube. And he is passionate to find out what is this. And it's in the same case with the ghost investigators, that they themselves have had profound, extraordinary experiences, and they wish to find out what it is, or they wish to be connect with other people who've had similar experiences.
We're talking with Dr. Paul Kingsbury about his four-year research project into the various groups that we often talk about on this program. We're going to take a break now. We're talking with Dr. Paul Kingsbury about the research project he's on. The title of the Newsweek article that caught our attention is How Mainstream Culture Has Turned Us Into Believers. Is that what we are, believers? As Paul mentioned a little bit ago, A lot of people are confronted with these phenomena, and that's why they become interested in the topics. They see a flying saucer in their backyard or come face to face with some kind of a being, Bigfoot. They're in the crop circle themselves. That's why they start digging into it. So, but are there other cultural influences that sort of drag us into this, whether we like it or not? We'll get into that in a moment, and a little bit later, I'll save a little room for a couple of your calls and questions. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Paul, I wanted to return to the question about religion because you hear that in sort of snarky, smarmy articles that sort of put down this field of endeavor and inquiry, that this is really just people needing to fill a hole in their lives, so they turn to something other than organized religion, and they worship Bigfoot, they worship aliens. I don't know. I mean, I suppose that could be true for some people who are drawn to these topics, but I mean, as you mentioned, millions of people around the world have been confronted by these kinds of things with UFOs. It's not just a light in the sky. Sometimes it's up close. There are physical trace cases. There are radar cases involving military and commercial pilots. There is evidence, and it drives them. Is there something beyond that?
Yeah, so with I always think of the X-Files poster for Agent Mulder, the with the spaceship, and below that, I want to believe. And I would, for me, much of the culture of paranormal investigations involves this wanting, this desire. And I think one way to think about culture is how we organize our desires, how we relate to the world. And I would suggest that the world is quite extraordinary. There is a constant syncopation or overlap between the extraordinary and the ordinary as we navigate our lives through different parts of town, in our work worlds, with families, that miracles do happen. And I think people who get in these investigation cultures have encountered something that they can't explain, or they want to find out more, and it is inciting them. And these conferences provide arenas to encounter these divine spaces, be they crop circles, or to discuss the language of ufology and ghosts in another field. Interestingly, I gave a talk at SFU, Simon Fraser University Geography, crop circles, and it was a packed room, and many local crop circle researchers, enthusiasts were there. And they were somewhat disappointed, though, that I didn't talk more about what causes crop circles. I didn't talk enough about the crop circles. My research is on the researchers, not the crop circles. So people are passionate. They want to encounter, get proximity to these paranormal objects.
You were mentioning about how, there are divisions. There's the Bigfoot people and the UFO people and the ghost hunters, and sometimes people from outside those groups will think never the twain shall meet, that these are different groups, but there is a lot of overlap, and not just in the groups, but also in the cases. There are places where Bigfoot is seen in proximity to a UFO, where UFOs are seen in proximity to crop circles, where ghosts and ETs sort of inhabit the same kind of space and switch back and forth. I'm wondering if there is room in your final project for sort of an interdisciplinary approach.
Well, yes. I've spoken to people, particularly at the UFO conferences, who have witnessed Bigfoot in proximity to a spaceship in these small localized spaces, which is really interesting. One of my aims is to set up a workshop, a mini conference in Vancouver in British Columbia, to bring some of the investigation groups I've been working with together. So they include the ghost groups of paranormal investigation, Northern Paranormal Investigations, Vancouver Interior Paranormal Society. So to bring the ghost folks together, Charles Lamoureux, the Sky Watcher, I'd like to bring into the mini conference, BC's Cryptozoology Scientific Club, to bring them together and have a discussion. And I think they're very keen to come together and have a forum to engage the public on these topics. And I think as an academic, I wield a high degree of legitimacy as a professor. and I am very much for public dialogue on these topics, precisely because in interviewing people, I'm absolutely convinced, regardless of what we understand these things to be, they've profoundly affected people's lives, and this is something that we need to understand and talk about.
I wonder if you mentioned about delivering a presentation on crop circles, and the reception sounded like it was pretty positive. What about blowback from your colleagues? Any of that? And I remember reading an article about your work. I think it might have been either in the local paper where you live or in the university paper. It was very positive.
Securing a grant gives me a lot of legitimacy. Simon Fraser University calls itself the engaged university. So I think it's a common kind of trend amongst universities and academic communities is that we can no longer just be an ivory tower. I don't think universities have really been that way, but perhaps there's some legitimacy to that. But as a professor, my colleagues, we are asked to engage communities to get out into the world. And particularly as a cultural geographer, what I love about geography is it's about life. It's about people's lives in different parts of the world, how they relate to places, to different regions of cultural backgrounds, and so on. And my colleagues have been highly supportive. It's also given a lot of coverage for the department as well. And I think there's a lot of support in academia for what I'm doing.
I'm glad to hear that. What about, have you considered the possibility of paranormal hotspots, of visiting? There are locations, at least here in the Western U.S., several of them, generally in proximity to Native American populations, but that where multiple kinds of different phenomena are reported over an extended period of time.
Right, so as a geographer, I'm fascinated by the microgeographies, these small-scale places that gather together, like you say, hotspots. So I'm reminded of Skinwalker Ranch in the Western U.S. In Vancouver, is considered a flap spot for UFO UAP activities. The Hasdalen Lights in Norway particularly fascinates me. Again, this small valley that gathers together these anomalous lights that Erling Strand's been investigating. And you find in these regions, research cultures gather around them. So again, I think as a geographer, it's important to consider the role of place in gathering these phenomena. And with ancient sites, Native American sites, there's a whole kind of historical layering of energies, cultures, transmitting knowledge and stories about strange goings on in these parts too. So yeah, I think it's a thoroughly geographical phenomena as well as paranormal.
Yeah, you could write a whole book on the Native American connection to this, how far back it goes, and especially in some of these hotspot locations where it's been recorded for, or reported, at least in oral traditions, for hundreds of years.
Yes, in Canada, in the First Nations and in the Pacific Northwest, there's the whole Sasquatch, the etymology of the word, it's a First Nations Aboriginal word, and so there's folklore, there's cultures that have always been very intimately associated with the paranormal. Yeah.
Well, words, language, the disconnection between language and the visible, that's one of the aspects that you wrote about in the Newsweek article.
Yeah, so for the Crop Circle conference, I consider it a figural space. So I'm borrowing on the philosopher Jean-François Lyotard, who was really interested in the division, the tension between language and the visible. Language is slippery. Words don't have a inherent meaning. They only make sense in relation to other words. And on the other hand, we live, our existence involves navigating the visual. And so the figural involves this tension between the visible and the meaningful. And during the conference, there was a really extraordinary event happened when this was at Hackpen Hill, when we couldn't access the crop circle. And I was in the car with three other crop circle enthusiasts, including Jonathan DeVeerville, and we got lost in the English countryside. it was a classic example of getting lost in the opacity of language. It was getting dark. We couldn't read the maps. The glow of our iPhones was getting brighter as it was getting darker, and we got lost in this landscape. And it for me, it exemplifies this figural space, this kind of labyrinth between the visible and meaningful, because we couldn't find this bed and breakfast to drop off one of the researchers. And so the paranormal research then involves these failures, these trials and error to actually find the paranormal entity itself, in this case, the crop circle.
Does this end up being a book or a series of books?
It does. It's going to be a series of journal articles. I will submit them to Referee Geography Journal articles. I've recently been asked to give a plenary lecture for Cultural Geography's Journal at the American Association of Geographers meeting in New Orleans next April, which is really good news, I found out today. And I will present my Figural Spaces of Crop Circle research paper. And then down the line, George, it does become a book, I think. I wasn't sure during the project, but as it goes on, it's becoming quite clear to me. It's a larger than life kind of project, which deserves a book length treatment.
You know, you mentioned about the X-Files poster. I'm looking at a copy of it, and I wonder if at some level there is evidence that people are deluding themselves, or there is an aberration of some kind for a percentage.
Yeah, so I try and tread the middle ground in the project. On the one hand, I don't want to explain away people's encounters with extraordinary entities as socially constructed. It's the product of psychological delusion, or they are ideologically produced, these meanings. It's purely cultural. On the other hand, I don't want to take everything at face value, or just, you know, read their words as though they're mirroring their reality. I think it's important to occupy a middle space. And yeah, at the UFO conference, for example, people will say there are charlatans amongst us, there are hoaxers amongst us that can't be trusted. And I think that's part and parcel of the culture. So it would be pretty naive to assume that there are no tricks and lies being told in these spaces, for sure.
I guess you need to carve out some territory for conspiracy theory, because the conspiracy theories are part of all of these different disciplines.
Yeah, so particularly with the issue of belief. You know, one of my theoretical approaches to this, George, is through psychoanalysis. And I like to think of Carl Sagan's notion that extraordinary claims requires extraordinary evidence. And I kind of approach paranormal investigation cultures whereby extraordinary cultures require extraordinary theories. And psychoanalysis does this because it provides a very good vocabulary to think about the role of desire, the unconscious, and fantasy, not as something psychological in our heads, but the ways in which it's externalized in people's practices. Desire, the unconscious, is outside in terms of what isn't spoken of, what is taboo. So when it comes to conspiracy, from a psychoanalytic point of view, a conspiracy boils down to the idea that there is an other of the other, that there is some kind of puppet master that is pulling the strings beyond the official edifice, be that the government, the state, the military, other institutions. And so there's a belief in some kind of higher other behind the official edifice. So conspiracy is there, but it's such a sprawling domain, George, in terms of the amount of books, DVDs, literature. Sure. On these topics, I have to kind of constrain it somewhat.
Well, I have a house full of it if you need to borrow some. And if you want to learn more about Skinwalker Ranch, I can help with that too. You know, I think about a lot of academics who have gone down sort of this road, not exactly taking the path that you've taken. They don't enmesh themselves enough to see beyond the obvious. For example, with UFOs, I think most straightforward researchers would say 90 to 95% of the UFO reports are explainable in prosaic terms. It's that other 5% that are interesting, and they would go further. There is pretty substantial paper trail to show that there has been purposeful disinformation, that there has been a muddying of the waters. And I know that gets into conspiracy men in black kind of territory, but it happens to be real.
Yeah, I think for me, everything is on the table. Or there's I try and keep the free play going in terms of the possibilities. I think I like how you said I'm enmeshed in this because I think I'm actually, as the project goes on, I'm becoming part of the synchronicities that people talk about. So
What do
particularly
you,
you.
how do you mean?
Charles Lamoureux, he's the sky watcher based in Vancouver. He was actually at the MUFON conference in Irvine, California, and our paths didn't cross when I was at this conference in 2015. And then Charles sent me a copy of his movie Nocturnal Lights, and it portrayed part of the scene was at a MUFON conference, and in a scene I saw myself in that movie. I kind of glimpsed, is that me with the leather satchel? And it was. And I said, I called Charles, and Charles, I'm on your movie. We didn't meet in the movie, but I was there. And the talk I gave at SFU was attended by someone who attended the Crop Circle conference in Devizes. She lived in Vancouver. She, for some reason, turned on the radio and heard the announcement for my lecture. So I am becoming aware of some interest in synchronicities as the research goes on. And I think that I have to kind of be aware of that, and that is data for me as a researcher and become enmeshed in it somewhat.
Well, wait till you see your first alien or something, then you're really caught in the web.
Yeah,
It's
what is
it.
a go
Go ahead.
ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, at the One MUFON conference, apparently there was an alien encounter in the hotel concerning a lady who was supposedly, apparently, carrying a hybrid fetus. And according to some of the investigators there, the ETs weren't too happy that she was dancing late at night in the hotel lobby bar. And this is
Okay.
what some of the stories at the conference.
Right. I'd take that one maybe with a grain of salt. But okay.
Yeah.
Dr. Paul Kingsbury, thanks very much. I hope you'll come back and talk to us when the project gets further along. I'd love to monitor your progress.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on the show, George.
Anytime. Thanks very much. We move on now. Dr. Barry Downing has been at this for a long time. His latest book, Biblical UFO Revelations, comes 49 years after he first ventured into this territory. We'll be right back with more